Hi, welcome to Rockle and Russell's YouTube review. Each week we'll be setting each other challenges on YouTube and finding videos for hopefully your entertainment. Hope you enjoy this current episode.
You know, like me and Emma went to watch, me, Emma and Dolly went to watch Shrek the musical at the weekend. And we went to this like Bracknell South Hill Park like arts centre, which is nice little theatre actually. Quite compact and nice. It's really like a scaled down like Hackney Empire, so it's got like the kind of balconies and that, but just shrunk right up. So it's a really nice place to watch stuff. We walked through a little kind of gallery area where there was some art up on the walls, and what it was, Emma was aware of it because I think it's something that she's seen or has heard someone speaking about at work, and it was. Some of them were on canvases, but a lot of them were on just clear perspex,
right?
squares, or what it was is they had people. I don't know whether it was visually impaired people or people that were just blindfolded, but people who were just kind of couldn't see and were played music like classical music and just given a paintbrush and said, "Right, just paint you think you're hearing." And so they're really good, like really bright, like nice colours and that. Really, some of them look like the classic thing where people would say, "Oh, I could do that." You know, because it was just kind of lines and splashes of paint and stuff. But I think the difference is, yes, you could physically do that, but you wouldn't have the artistic sort of awareness to come up with that as a concept or an idea in the first place.
No, exactly. And have you heard of like Anish Kapoor? He's like an artist. He did the, the slide outside the West Ham Stadium for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Or the coffee bean in Chicago in that Millennium Park.
Yeah.
That's Anish Kapoor. He's a British Indian artist. And we went to an exhibition, me and previous girlfriend, and it was like a massive bit of wax was slowly being pushed through like three doorways back and forth. Like, and it was just to show how it kind of decays and stuff. And then in one bit of the exhibition was just a cannon that every kind of 5 minutes, they put a big bit of wax in it and then fired it at the wall. And then, you know, people like queuing around the corner to see it. And it does sound like stupid, but then he's got the kind of know-how and the will to do it and put it out there. And he's so respected that he can kind of do those things. And it's like, it is all in the eye of the beholder as well. Like, I used to have to help a kid in a wheelchair in his art lessons at Oakland's College. He was quite rude, actually. And I'm not very good at art. I appreciate art. I've got a lot of art books and stuff. I love art, as you can probably tell from the wall behind me.
Yeah.
I'd draw something and he'd go, "That's not very good. Can you draw it again?" And I'd be like, "Well, it'd be the same." And then part of his art course was art appreciation, and I had to take notes for him. And the guy who is really impassioned about it, like, he really talked really well about it. And he kind of said, like, you can make art out of anything, really. He said, look at the ceiling, there was a bit of sellotape. He goes, "Right, okay, write down how that bit of sellotape got there." And some people wrote like three pages, and other people just wrote a person was putting up Christmas lights and left it there or something like that. And he goes, "Well, no, because, you know, if you look around it, what I'm basically saying is, if you look at a piece of art, why has the artist done that kind of thing rather than, you know, I could do that." And I thought, that's a better way. And if you go to, I took my mum to Tate Modern, and she was just like, she was not an art and appreciator.
It's like, have you seen those videos of people looking at a fire extinguisher on the wall?
Yeah. I went to the Tate Modern once, and I was on my own. And then, you know, you kind of like listening in on other people's conversations when you're on your own, like you don't sit down there with your own thoughts. And there were these three tubes, and one was kind of had bubbles coming out of it, like proper bubbles, like you were blowing bubbles. One of them had like foam from like a bath kind of thing coming out of another one. And then the other one had a different type of bubbles coming out of it. And it was all about kind of how industries pollute the atmosphere in different ways. And I listened into this couple next to me, and the woman walked over to her husband and went, "Looks like a big spunky cock, doesn't it?" that kind
and,
of
went, can you remember what accent she had?
Oh, no, it was like London. It was normal. Maybe slightly South London, if anything, but...
If you were telling it and you had the artistic license to do it in a particular voice, what accent would you go for that comment?
I think definitely but doing Richie from Bottom.
That's niche. That's more niche than I was expecting.
Yeah, so yeah, I think you'd have to pick an accent where it would be kind of inappropriate to do, like an Indian accent or like a like an African accent, rather than like a Geordie accent or a Scouse accent, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to reel off 10 different accents now of that.
No, I'll do them to myself later.
if you could voice note a few to me, that'd be great.
What was it again? What's the line again?
It looks like a big spunking cock, doesn't it?
Spunking. Oh, spunking nice. Cock. I thought you said spunky. Spunking.
Oh, spunky cock would have been better, I feel. But yeah. Oh, how's the seaside? What seaside did you go to?
Hailing Island, like off of Portsmouth, Portsmouth, Chichester, sort of.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, really nice. We're really lucky. The weather was great. So it's easy, isn't it? Like by the seaside, if the weather's nice, you're like, why do we even get on planes? And then you go there next year and it pisses it down for 3 days and you're like, ah.
We always go to the Mumbles in Swansea because it's got an arcade, basically. And I don't think we've ever been there and it's been nice, but we still go there because we like the arcade.
Yeah.
But we've got quite a collection of tokens now.
Dolly loves tickets. She loves them.
Yeah, but we're playing this like Willy Wonka thing. But there was this Willy Wonka one where the coins get pushed out, but you're not after the coins because it gives you tickets. It gives you cards, and if you get a certain amount of cards, one of each card, you put them all together and you get 5,000 tokens or something. So we've spent ages on it, like getting all these things, and then realised that you had to get a golden ticket with it. And when that golden ticket's obviously a lot harder to come by. And so I spent quite a bit of this week looking on eBay. I thought I'm not spending 25 quid to get one from sent over from America. But then there's a little bit of me that wants a 6-foot monkey in the house. Yeah.
I Dolly's first ever visit to a place like that, I think it was Butlins in Bognor, like the first time. And her first time there and first time watching me go on a grabber.
Yeah.
And I won a unicorn.
Love it.
Like first go, put like 50p in and had like two goes for 50p and like won it on the first one. Every time we've been on one of those since, she's cried. You know, like people say with gambling, it's if you win on one of your first ever bets, it's bad, isn't it? Because you think it's easy and then you get hooked. Yeah, she's like old enough now to understand a lot of things, but she still doesn't get them. Like,
yeah,
she thinks once it's been picked up, that's like, right, that's done. I've won that now. And we're like, oh no, it might be too heavy. It might fall out.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a big fan of a grabby machine. We've got tons of the stupid things. And then we won one last time we went, and a girl was trying to get her dad to win her an octopus on the other, like one next to us. And he was like, oh, I've only got £1 left. Like, you know, he'd had enough of the day kind of thing. And we won this kind of Sonic the Hedgehog Mario or something like that. And I just looked at Zoe and I looked at the girl. And then I handed it to the girl and she was really happy. And the parents were kind of like really thankful. And then we walked off and I was like, why the fuck have I done that? I've been really appreciated that for 30 seconds on the way home. I feel like the greater good a lot of the time kind of takes over, doesn't it?
I suppose it's weird though, because you think like the aim of it is the playing it and the winning it, like just being it's nice. I suppose people would appreciate it, but afterwards they wouldn't have that sense of achievement.
No. And there's kind of quite an etiquette to it as well, like, because I don't want to hog a machine, but also if I put enough money in it, I still want to stay on it, so I'll leave one go left and go get some more money kind of thing. And we've had people queue behind us before going, oh, can we go on this next? And I'm kind of, well, that could be 20 minutes. I'm here until I win one. Yeah, so we've got like a change pot. Well, it's like a, you know, a big orange juice. Yeah, all the time, always goes in the pot. And then we take that to Mumbles. And then if you don't consider it as like the amount of money you spend, it's fine. But if you count it out and then what you're putting in and stuff, then it's not so fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You think, I've spent 40 quid getting this Sonic the Hedgehog when I could have bought one for four, yeah. But no, like you say, the fun of it is the winning of it, not the actual thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
And it's probably better for you because you have a child. Shall we do some podcasty bits, mate? Or do you want to just continue doing that?
The chit chat.
Yeah, that's my favourite bit.
It's a good little mix, though, isn't it? Because then when we do get into it, you kind of realise what the fun in sort of looking for these clips and watching them and everything else. But it's good that we just sort of chat as well, because it's kind of what it started as, didn't it? Good. You don't want to sort of put a depressing label on it, but it probably wouldn't. This wouldn't be something we were doing if it wasn't for coronavirus.
No, definitely. And then, just through a night out and watching videos together. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, it's nice that it was something good to come out of it, I think.
Outside of Zoe and the guy I look after at work, you might be the person I talk to the most.
Well, yeah.
Because I like...
I think, does muttering to yourself count?
Yeah, calling yourself names on a golf course doesn't count. what was I going to say? Right, we're over 2,500 listeners now, which is awesome. Please rate us and subscribe and all that nonsense. And Sean Locke episode is now our most popular episode ever. So I listened to it again, so it might just be me actually, but putting the numbers up. That's actually quite a decent
episode. Have you gone into like Apple Podcasts ever? I haven't, so that's why I was asking. Mm. Have you ever gone in and searched Sean Locke?
No, I can do it now though.
Because it works, doesn't it? Because I did it with Stuart Lee once, where I just typed his name and then it finds any podcast that person is kind of on. But I don't know whether, because it does make you wonder, doesn't it, that people maybe find it because they're looking for Sean Locke stuff.
Yeah. I like the fact that people have listened to it and then not gone on to listen to any others. And all the episodes, there's one the Grief Cast, which is Jimmy Carr talking about Sean Locke.
Yeah.
Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe talking about Sean Locke. Frank Skinner talking about Sean Locke. Podder Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sean Locke.
Yeah. I've listened to that.
Sean Locke Small Screen 90s. Sean Locke 15 Stories High. And there's another one about Sean Locke by Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe, and then it's us.
Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 from the top. So maybe that's how we were found for that one. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a good episode, even if it's me and you talking about, I think it was the beginning of it, we're talking about Dolly's packed lunches.
Makes you wonder how anybody listened to
it. It might just be me. Use it at work to kind of have some noise in the background while I sleep. Season 2, episode 13, and our 47th ever podcast. And we chose to do it about kind of on-screen confrontations and arguments this week, haven't we?
Yeah, was it... we've spoken about fights before, haven't we? Like movie fights, TV fights. And I brought it up again a couple of weeks ago, and then you said even by our standards, that's quite visual. arguments instead, and I agree.
It'd be like looking at Neil Buchanan's best pictures, which is an idea. confrontation and arguments, and we've kind of picked, I think, a couple from movies. I think all four were almost from movies, and then I've changed a couple of mine, so we've got a bit more range to it. But then I don't know, they kind of happen all the time, I don't think you could have. I've never thought of like what was the best one of them. If that makes sense.
No, and this is one I know. Like with a lot of these, where you end up with about 50 things that you end up wanting to choose from. This definitely feels like one that over the course of the next few weeks, ones that I've completely overlooked will pop into my head.
Yeah,
it was hard for me to eliminate certain things. So like some of the Larry David Curb arguments are like brilliant, but we've kind of done quite a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a couple of what led me to where I did was a couple of, there was, funnily enough, one particular person who I thought of very quickly, who I then ended up didn't picking a clip for, but I picked ones that I was kind of pointed towards by that person, old Joey Pants. He was the first person I thought of. Was, how do you actually say, is it Pantaleano?
Yeah.
Him in Midnight Run was the first thing that popped into my head.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
I remember sort of him having phone arguments with De Niro.
Yeah.
But then that led me to one of the ones that I picked that I just, once I'd seen it and it had been sort of reminded me of it, hard to ignore.
Yeah. And like talking about on-screen like fights, what would be your kind of favourite movie fights?
Happy Gilmore and Bob Barker.
Excellent start. Yeah. Like I read a lot of golf stuff at the moment, and they were saying there's no such thing as a good golf movie, and I thought, how fucking dare you. I thought I could name three like that, but actually two.
So Happy Gilmore and Bob Barker, and I suppose serious fights, they're harder to think of for me because I like action films, which is generally where you would see fights, but
yeah,
they're not a genre that springs to mind first. I think if you started talking, like we said before, you've got a sort of better knowledge of movies and films than I have. You would say things that would then prompt memories from me.
I love the fight of Brad Pitt and Bruce Lee in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's good because it mixes like the comedy with like a good actual fight scene. But a very actual full-out fight, I think the escape from the building in The Matrix, where Neo and like Carrie Ann Moss, is it, and Lawrence Fishburne are taking on all the agents and stuff. I think it's amazing, and it's kind of changed everything when it came to fight scenes, didn't it? It's kind
of
camera angles and slow motion and bullet tracing, and like I watched how they did it and stuff as well, and I just thought, I don't know how people even come up with it. Like, right, we're going to have a whole completely green room, and this camera's going to go from here round to here. You'll be hanging on here, like, you know, not just we'll let you two have a fight and we'll film it. Kind of, it just come so far. But I think that on the other end of the scale, I think it's in Bridget Jones's Diary, the second one, I don't know what it's called, between Colin Firth and Hugh Grant. They're two very like, well, middle-class men having a fight, and they're not very good at it. I think that's really good as well. Kind of, I feel like I've seen more fights like that than I have like any other fight in there.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I mentioned that to Emma the other day and said that I don't know if this exists or not, but it feels like something that would on Twitter is that clip of that fight. So I've not seen that film.
Yeah.
It won't surprise
me. Yeah, well done.
I'm aware. I'm aware of that fight.
Yeah.
And I was saying to him, I'm sure somewhere on Twitter, if you looked, you would find that clip of that fight with a reference underneath to like, this is Arsenal's and Tottenham's fight for fourth place. that I saw the other day that I ended up seeing because of searching for what we're talking about is, I think it's it's the first In Between Us movie, the Cavos one or wherever it was they were, Malia.
Yeah.
Where Jay and Will fight.
Yeah.
And they end up just kind of like a headlock cuddle and like slowly fall to the ground.
I remember my dad telling me this story. It involves Mick Walker. That there was like a presentation evening in Hatfield, the social club in Hatfield, and there was some reason why my dad's team, I think it may have been the Hollybush at the time, weren't allowed to collect their medals or something or other. So they went to the social club with the intention of getting their medals, kind of thing. And it was all a bit silly. And I think Billy Byrne was involved in this. DIYSOS's Billy Byrne. And it ended up in the car park with that one team fighting my dad's team in the car park. And Mick Walker and my dad were mates. And they were kind of against each other. And Mick just said to my dad, do you want to just pretend? Putting each other in headlocks. So no one else bothered them.
Really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, Mick thinking on his feet there. I don't know, you don't really see, like, you know, obviously working behind the bar in the Oak, there was not really, never really a fight, is there? It's normally two punches and everything split up. And in movies, somehow you get 5-10 minute fight scenes between the
two. Yeah.
Oh, another good fight scene. I've mentioned before the end of Lethal Weapon 4, Jet Li versus Riggs and Murtaugh. Yeah, it's really good. So arguments-wise, I think I picked one reality one, one kind of staged one, and then we got two movie ones as well.
Yeah.
Should we get on with that?
Yeah, let's get in with one.
I spent the whole year demanding that Adam Driver demolish me, crush my larynx, you unwieldy boulder, explode my... Oh, fuck. Oh, shit.
Hey, John.
Oh, wow, Adam Driver, can't believe you're calling.
Oh, good, listen to me.
Yep.
What the fuck are you doing?
Excuse me?
This bit.
Right.
This bit. This thing you've been doing that's either sexual or violent.
Oh, you know, I like to think of it more as a little of column A, little of column B.
This strange bit that for some reason you pulled me into.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? When you first started doing it, it was easy for me to shrug it off.
Especially with those shoulders, I bet.
But then it kept going on and on.
Bet you could shrug off a whole planet with those big peaks.
On and on. Stop talking.
Right.
Do you realize, over this past year, what you've asked me to do to you? Collapse on your chest.
Yeah.
Tie your fingers in a square knot.
Yeah.
Step on your throat. Shatter your knees. Pull your heart out through your ear. What's wrong with you? You realize we're strangers, right? I don't know you. And now random people on the internet stan us.
Right.
Claiming that you thirsting over me is a mood.
You're right, Adam. I get it.
I'm sick of people stopping me on the street and asking me if I'm going to punch a hole in you like a marriage story wall.
That's completely fair. Yep.
And you know what? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Yes.
Because you know this was inappropriate, right?
I do.
But just from the beginning, you were just like what?
I was having some weird fun.
Exactly.
Yep.
And now you're what?
I'm America's naughtiest bitch.
Sure. But more importantly, you're...
I'm 6 feet of nasty, spankable bird meat crammed into a suit?
Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I'm trying to get you to say you're sorry.
Right.
Jesus Christ, you deeply weird, small thing.
I'm sorry, Adam. I'm truly, truly sorry. Consider this bit over. It's done.
Okay.
Right.
It's fine.
Huh.
Look, it's been a rough year for everyone, and I can tell it's really gotten to you, sitting alone in your void. But I think maybe it might be time for you to step out of it for a bit. Get up from your chair. See what the world has to offer. Explore the space, man. Who knows? Maybe you'll even discover some surprises along the way.
Huh. All right, yeah, I think I might. Just to be absolutely clear, though, Adam, are you giving me an order?
Sure.
Yeah, it's just, it didn't sound like an order.
Explore the fucking space, you hollow-boned Mr. Bean cosplayer. Look around you, you underbaked gingerbread boy.
Oh, God, that feels good.
Okay, that's from, what's the John Oliver program called?
Last Week Tonight.
Last Week Tonight.
Yeah.
He kind of like, every week he'd bring up Adam Driver somehow and then, like, tell him to kind of do excruciating things to him. And then Adam Driver, obviously, is a big part of it there. It's acting the hell out of that, isn't he? It's really, yeah. Really good.
Do you know the backstory behind it? Like, what made him pick Adam Driver in the first place?
It was nothing. I think he just chose him as a kind of hunky actor, basically.
Yeah.
And, I have the kind of thought of Adam Driver that he would not appreciate that and want to get involved in it, if you know what I mean. Like, where you could probably do it with someone like Matt Damon or, you know, someone who is known for being a bit of a joker. I've never seen that in Adam Driver. And Adam Driver, I think, is, like, outstanding. I think he's one of the best actors around.
I don't think I've seen him in many things. Klansman.
Yeah, Klansman, amazing. Marriage Story. If you haven't seen Marriage Story, go watch Marriage Story. He's absolutely, like, fantastic in that. Him and Scarlett Johansson are kind of going through a divorce and how they're kind of coping with it. And he's, like, it's one of the best performances I've ever seen from an actor. He's brilliant. Have you seen Logan Lucky? That's a Daniel Craig movie. And the Daniel Craig brothers trying to kind of doing a bank robbery kind of thing. Obviously, you haven't seen all the Star Wars ones he's in. Little Bit Sunshine and Silence.
Oh, yeah.
Lincoln.
I've seen Little Bit Sunshine, but I suppose it was so long ago that I wouldn't have recognised him in it.
Yeah.
Because he would have been really young, wouldn't he?
But yeah, he's absolutely fantastic. I think he's acting the hell out of even just doing that, where he's kind of having a fake phone conversation with John Oliver. And John Oliver's really good as well. I think the way he kind of talks about the news, where like Seth Meyers does that, A Closer Look, I think his kind of half an hour kind of stories about certain things, like he did one about the World Cup, And I was kind of like, oh my God, yeah, this is all awful.
Yeah.
He's kind of, it's weird how an English comedian like John Oliver is so massive in America, but was kind of unheard of in England for so long, wasn't he?
Yeah, because he did The Bugle with Andy Zaltzman, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was good. And it was, but you wouldn't have thought that was the sort of thing that would have elevated someone to US chat show style sort of, well, not chat show, like daily show. Not
yeah. Chat show. On The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and I think Trevor Noah took his job.
Yeah.
And then he was the kind of headmaster on Community. Yeah. And it just went like up and up and up and up, and he's still going. He's like won Emmys and Golden Globes and all sorts, yeah, hasn't he?
I've seen him like once on Mock the Week years ago.
Yeah, not great.
No, and just like there was weird things like that that at the time I would have just seen him as another person on Mock the Week that I wouldn't have known. And then it was only when I started to see him, because I've got quite a good memory with stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when I saw sort of in America and doing well, I was thinking, I'm sure I've seen him and I like on stuff, and you sort of look back and and he was.
Mm.
Because Andy Zaltzman, does The Bugle, does he still do that now? Because he's like almost like a full-time test match special sort of.
Oh, yeah, of course he is.
Because he's a massive cricket fan, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Bugle. I don't think I've ever listened to it. So
yeah, really good. It's just one of those ones that I just sort of, so many podcasts out there, you forget after a little while. If you don't listen to one for a few weeks and you get into something else, you do forget about them. Not in a bad way, like they're really good, but there's just so many you forget. But yeah, I think I heard someone saying the other day that he is now a cricket reporter, not even comedic way anymore. He is just part of the cricket team.
Oh, right, amazing. I know, what a job though.
Yeah.
I'm not even that massive into cricket anymore, but I would still, like, if someone wanted to pay me to watch sport and talk about it, I'd quite happily do it. I'd do it with curling if it was like. But yeah, John Oliver's show, Last Week Tonight, I think is amazing. And like, I think it works really well with clips as well, YouTube wise. But yeah, I love that argument between him and, well, it's not really an argument, is it? But it's a confrontation between him and Adam Driver. And yeah, I think Adam Driver's just, like I said, just smashes that out of the park. He's really, like, even he's putting his full acting abilities into that. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, well, I think if you didn't, like, watching it then, having not seen it before, I think if you didn't, if you played that to someone just like the audio of it and they didn't really know much about John and the type of show it was, if you said to someone, oh, listen to this, this bloke was having a go at someone and they're on air live, and then that person called them up and had it out with them, because he does such a good job of it, you could convince someone that it was like a genuine call, couldn't you? Like, there's been times on Talk Sport and stuff in the past, hasn't there? Frank Lampard has phoned in when he's been getting criticised. You could convince someone that was like a genuine sort of call.
Like that woman, I think today or like this weekend, couldn't get out of her like street to drive off. I think it was in Plymouth or something. And so she had to drive through a marathon. have you seen this?
No.
And then I watched the clip. Luckily, I watched the clip before I read anything about it. But she's kind of driving and people are getting in her way and saying, like, what are you doing kind of thing. And she's like, I can't get out. I need to go this way. And people are like, oh, I'm going to ring the police, and like smacking on her window. And it was like Angry Karen runs down marathon. You know, like
Angry Karen.
Yeah. And then these kind of stories that went along with it, this crazed woman was like, and she was just like genuinely wanted to go somewhere. Just went through a set of cones. That was about it. But yeah, it's amazing what they do with these kind of stories, the clickbait kind of things, isn't it? Like, it's awful, isn't it, really?
I knew about the holes in the desert, of course, and everywhere I looked, there could have been a hole. Normally, my prospects of coming back alive from a meeting with Nikki were 99 out of 100. But this time, when I heard him say a couple of hundred yards down the road, I gave myself 50-50.
Get off talking to people about me behind my back, going over my head.
What people?
What people would you think? I wasn't gonna find out.
I don't even know what you're talking about, Nick.
No? You said I'm bringing heat on you? I gotta listen to people because of your fucking shit? You're ordering me out? You better get your own fucking army, pal.
I didn't do anything. I mean, I didn't order you or anybody. I only told Andy Stone that you had a lot of heat on you and that was a problem.
You want me to get out of my own fucking town?
Yeah, I said let the bullshit blow over for a while so I can run the casino. Anything goes wrong with the casino, it's my ass. It's not yours, it's my ass.
I don't know whether you notice or not, but you only have your fucking casino because I made that possible. I'm what counts out here, not your fucking country clubs or your fucking TV shows. And what the fuck are you doing on TV anyhow? You know, I get calls from back home every fucking day. They think you went batshit.
I'm only on TV because I gotta be able to hang around a casino. You understand that.
You
know that.
You're fucking ass. You could have had the food and beverage job without going on television. You wanted to go on TV.
Yeah, I did want to go on TV. That way I have a forum. I can fight back. I'm known. People see me. They know they can't fuck around me like they could if I was an unknown. That's right.
You're making a big fucking spectacle of yourself.
Me? I wouldn't even be in this situation if it wasn't for you. You brought down so much fucking heat on me. I mean, every time I meet somebody here, the big question is, do I know you?
Oh, sure. Now you want to blame your fucking license on me.
No, Nikki, when you asked me if you could come out here, what did I tell you? I mean, you asked me, and I knew you were going to come out no matter what I said, but what did I tell you? Do you remember what I told you? Do you remember what I told you?
Back up a fucking minute here. 1 minute. I asked you, when the fuck did I ever ask you if I could come out here? Get this through your head, you. Get this through your head, you Jew motherfucker, you. You only exist out here because of me. That's the only reason. Without me, you, personally, every fucking wise guy still around, I'll take a piece of your fucking Jew ass. Then where you gonna go? Your fucking warrant don't ever go over my fucking head again, you motherfucker, you.
Yeah, I just think, I think objectively, those kind of films, those Scorsese sort of gangster films are really up there with the best. Like, because the reason I say objectively is they're not even, I wouldn't even say I'm a massive fan of them. Like, there's probably people I know who are more of a fan of like Goodfellas and Casino and that than I am, but they are just, performances are just amazing. Like, Goodfellas I've seen a couple of times, but I'd put it close to being sort of one of the films I would consider as being objectively one of the best films there is, just because I just think it's so brilliant that even like a non sort of gangster film person like me would still sort of appreciate how great they are.
Yeah, I don't, like, as good as Godfather 2 is, I prefer Casino.
Yeah.
I think, and in Robert De Niro movies, I think I would go Casino, Godfather 2, then Sleepers as my three favourites. I wouldn't touch Meet the Fockers. But Casino, I just like the kind of backdrop of it and the fact it's kind of about his life and him trying to get famous as well and how it works. And it's a long film, but it goes quite quickly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's 3 hours. Is it 3 hours or more? Or is it just shy of 3 hours?
It's 178 minutes, roughly. That's something I may have looked up today. And there's really memorable scenes from it. Like that argument scene's really good. But what kind of stands out is when Joe Pesci gets killed, that the kind of sight will stay with me forever. And as a
non-horror film fan, but I've seen horror films, I remember like genuinely like that made me a bit, I don't know, not scared, but
yeah, uneasy.
It was disturbing because it was just because of how brutal and realistic it was. And I would have been, what year did it come out?
95, around November 22nd.
You have this thing when you're having to get this knowledge from deep inside your brain, you look down, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is, you know.
Instead of looking up and to the left when you're lying.
Yeah, it's like Robert Richardson did the cinematography in that film.
So 95, I wouldn't have seen it at the cinema, so it would have been like a VHS that I would have seen that film on first. In fact, I think I owned it on VHS, so...
Yeah.
But I don't know how long after it released that would have been. A year or so, maybe, back then? Would it have been before something was out on video?
I definitely had it on video as well. Like, yeah.
Yeah, 90, so yeah, young enough. You
14,
know,
but, 15, we were.
Yeah, so to see things like that and be a little bit like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's a bit brutal.
Yeah.
Goodfellas, where he attacks the wife's neighbour with the gun as well. Like, there was a lot of really kind of rough stuff in those films. But so, well, you know what I was saying earlier about movie fights? Those are examples, aren't they, of stuff where there's not a lot, there's no like green screen and sort of jazzy camera angles in that. That's just, let's make this look as brutal and as real as we possibly can, and it is, well, they definitely achieve it.
Yeah, and then like to act, like when he gets the kind of final bits of dust on his face, but he's obviously still breathing, and you could see him kind of the sand coming away from his lips and stuff. You think, well, you've got to be a good actor to kind of do that as well without going,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, oh, it's such a brutal scene, and like the fact that he's in his pants and he's, you know, in Joe Pesci's shape, kind of thing, and just how demeaning it all is. And yeah, it's a great film. Like Sharon Stone's amazing in that as film as well. And I'm not a big Sharon Stone fan. I really like Don Rickles just in general. The fact that he's in it's great.
I've gone blank on his name now. Oh, God, what is his name? He's he's a bit of a. One of those people who's just in loads of things.
Kevin Pollock.
Kevin Pollock, yeah, he's a good impressionist.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good in that. There's a really funny scene in Casino where he's trying to have a serious meeting with De Niro about something, and De Niro just starts moaning about the blueberries.
Yeah, and the muffins, yeah.
Having the same amount of, the muffins not having the same amount of blueberries.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and James Woods in that film is a really good scumbag, isn't he?
Yes.
And he kind of plays a similar character in Any Given Sunday, doesn't he? Even though it's a different job, he's still that kind of slow-talking scumbag, greasy twat, isn't he? Yeah, he's very good at it. He's even good at that in The Simpsons, somehow. Casino could stand against any film. You know, those kind of shitty lad Bible, what's the best films? I think Casino would probably get in a semi-final.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I think, because they're very macho, very kind of alpha male laddie sort of films, those gangster films. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I like them and I think they're good, but I'm not like, oh yeah, you know, when The Irishman come out, I didn't sort of, I need to watch that the weekend it goes on Netflix. I kind of, the time passed and I was like, oh, I've got an opportunity to watch that now, I will.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Same with The Departed as well, like I thought.
Yeah, Departed. I tell you what I really like, that I always really liked, which is sort of slightly away from them because it's not a Scorsese, is Donnie Brasco, the Johnny Depp Al Pacino one.
Yeah, when we were kind of 18, 19, we were all really into that film.
Yeah, I always remember watching it around Ross Phillips's Shafty was always kind of had that. Well, if you ever ended up around his house after a night. Yeah, I always really liked that one. And it's just a little bit different because it's not, I don't know who it is, Donnie Brasco.
Let me look into the corners of my mind.
Yeah, dig deep.
Yeah, I remember we used to say it's a Fugazi a lot, didn't we? Too,
Fugazi, too. Yeah.
Mike Newell. You know, Blackburn Rovers.
I think Donnie Brasco and the hat trick away at Rosenberg.
Coming back to Casino, sorry. Citizen Kane, okay, is pretty much the best film of all time. And I can appreciate that why people think that. But if I held both DVDs in my hand and was told, you've got to watch one, Casino would go on. Really, really good film. But yeah, I really like Sleepers. The more I think about Sleepers, the more I think it's better than Casino.
Yeah, we watched Sleepers relatively recently, me and Emma, on like one of our Saturday night picks, because I think she was aware of it, thinking I might have seen that when it was out. I'm not sure. And I was like, I've definitely seen it because I owned it and I've watched it, times. But not too many that I would then say, oh, I don't want to watch it again.
Yeah, Phil, like Dustin Hoffman is the kind of crap lawyer and stuff. That's really good.
Yeah.
Okay!
What's wrong?
Mother!
What's wrong?
I bought those mother sponges. Part of that pain is mine. I'm sick and tired of you, mother.
No.
That was all mine in my basket. No.
Bull mother.
No,
I've never seen. Hold on, guys. Hold on. You don't want to make you get out. You don't want to start with me.
Me, don't do it. Don't do it.
You do not want to with me. You look in my eyes. I am the last person in the world you ever want to with. You understand me? You. You look at me,
I'll do it.
You'll be in the hospital in about 4 minutes.
Me, hold on, look.
Take him out of here.
Come on, Gary.
Take him out of here.
This is mine.
Come on, Gary.
It is not yours, you crazy.
Don't engage it. Don't engage.
Calm down.
Don't engage.
It's cool. Let's just get your stuff. And you're fine.
You're good, brother.
You're good. What's yours, me? What's yours? It's all right, me. It's all right, dude.
Oh my God, the task went away. This became serious. I have to stop Meatloaf from ripping Gary Busey's head off, literally. But if Gary decides he doesn't want to play within the rules, this is going
to
get worse.
Just stay, let's stand out here and let him talk to him for a minute. Shaver. I don't know what happened. Something's missing.
It was all in my basket.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's all right, me. Come on, brother. Please don't do it to me. I can't lose you. I can't lose you. I'm not going to lose you. You're going, I'm going. So let's just rethink what we can do here.
Just stay out here, because I don't want him coming at you or you coming at him.
It'd be tough.
Just don't do it. We can't have that.
No,
the whole thing goes to hell if that happens.
Sponge is yours?
The yellow paint is mine. That blue spray paint was mine.
This one here?
Yeah.
Here you go. This yellow paint, sir?
Yeah.
Let me see if I can unravel it and figure out where it's at, but don't go back in there yet.
Sailor B.
I'll come get you.
He didn't buy all this. Those okay. Big brushes.
This is stuff you picked out?
Yourself. Yeah, I know what I
did. Well, why don't you take what you think is yours?
I bought sponges, I bought a spray paint, I have my
We can
bag.
Also go right back down there and grab some more stuff.
But you just don't assume and you ask.
Me. Look, is this your bag? I might have just found your bag.
Let's just saddle.
It was under a corner.
You pushed me too far!
Does this look like it?
Thank you.
It was under a corner.
Take your spray paint.
Thank you very much.
Shut the up!
No, I can't.
Do your hard work and get out of my face!
I'm not in your face.
I'm going to say something right now.
I got it.
We are in here trying to win
yes.
for my charities.
Yes,
a bunch
we
of
are.
Very sick kids in Memphis.
Yes, we are.
This kind of language, energy, and stuff going on here is embarrassing to me.
I agree. I'm sorry.
Can
I apologize
Can we please
to you.
Stop it?
Done.
Thank you. All right, reel it in, you know. Got it out of your system. You're good
Nate.
To go for a minute.
Nate, we okay?
Not right now. I'm not okay right now.
Let's don't try to make up right now.
I'm not trying to make up. I'm just
Well, let's just don't do it
comfort.
At all.
Looking
well,
for comfort. So
I wouldn't even approach that man right now.
Absolutely outstanding.
You want to, so although I was kind of just smiling and chuckling the way through it, what was the bit where I laughed audibly?
when he says, they're my sponges, I really laugh at. yeah, so that's from series 11 of the US Celebrity Apprentice, which is a bigger deal out there, the Celebrity Apprentice. I think we do it over here every now and then, don't we, like a comic relief or whatever.
Maybe, and
it is a hotbed for funny moments, because I like it when celebrities get kind of start having a go at each other. But Meatloaf is 1,000% unhinged there, isn't he? Like,
yeah.
And then when he's saying, you don't just assume, you ask, and he looks like full on kind of like autistic almost, doesn't he? He's like got problems going on there. And
yeah.
And then the fact that he's in the wrong, 100% in the wrong, that's not his stuff. And he's been a dick to Gary Busey. It's brilliant saying these sentences. Yeah. And then they find his bag and he's, have your fucking spray paint back, and throws the spray paint at him. I just think at no point did he have any kind of remorse or kind of, and Gary Busey goes up to say, are we all right? And he's like, no, we're not right now. Get out of my face. And he's just, it's just so wrong, isn't it? And like,
yeah.
John Rich is the country singer there who you can hear talking.
Oh, I was just going to ask you who the other people were.
Yeah, I don't know much of his music and stuff, but I think he goes on to win that series. I love the fact, when they're trying to calm him down, you can't say, they don't say Meatloaf, they just say meat.
Yeah.
Like it's his first name. Like meat, just calm down. Meat. Mark McGraw, I don't know who he's the singer of. Mark McGraw.
Mark McGraw, that name rings a bell.
He's the lead singer of Sugar Ray. Pour some sugar on me. Is that?
Yeah.
I think did he date Madonna for a bit or something?
Yeah, either they, like a group that he was in or him on his own, had a hit that kind of crossed over and went up the charts here.
Every morning there's a halo hanging from the corner. That one. Gary Busey is like one of the weirdest people you're in show business.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say a minute ago, like, because from people just listening to that,
yeah,
there wasn't any gives away who it is that he's shouting at.
Oh yeah, good point.
And it, just so everybody, it's Gary Busey.
So it kind of, I cut the first minute of that video off because it is Meatloaf accusing, like just going around looking for this bag of stuff. And then I think he had a previous episode problem with Gary Busey over something minuscule. And then just kind of fucking explodes. He's a dickhead, isn't he?
Yeah. So is Gary Busey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're not wrong there.
I think having seen Gary Busey on Celebrity Big Brother in this country, I would be, regardless of whose paints and sponges they were, like that wasn't just one, that wasn't where it sort of started, was it? That would have been...
Yeah.
I think Gary Busey, and that was the sort of what tipped him over the edge, because he's an arse.
I think I remember the kind of confrontation now. It was, they had to do a task for Omaha Steaks, right? And Gary Busey was the project manager, and he had to choose people different jobs. And he gave Meatloaf the job of chef, I think, just because he was the fattest out of all of them. And Meatloaf was like, I don't cook, I have a chef, like kind of thing. Yeah. And Gary Busey's like, no, I'm project manager, I want you to do it. And like, Meatloaf was like not up for it. Throughout that whole entire series, Meatloaf is not with it, really. And he's crying at times, and then he's up and he's down. He's, you know, poor bloke, God rest his soul as well. He's obviously, but it's, he doesn't come over in that as very well. I think as soon as you scratch under the surface of probably 80% of celebrities, you're looking at a highly damaged person, aren't you?
Yeah, unfortunately, that does seem to be the case. Did you see after like Meatloaf died, someone dug out the clip of Avid Merian, like Lee Francis, interviewing, doing a red carpet interview with him, where
they got him singing at each other or something.
Yeah, about nicking Danny Minogue's underwear or something. It was along those lines. I can't remember what it was, but Meatloaf, you know, like the best thing with like big celebrities is when they join in with shit like that and don't get all sort of protective and sort of arrogant and blasé about it. That was one of the best examples of that ever. Like, who the person is was interviewing him was obviously like a piss take comedy character. Yeah. And the nature of the things that he was saying was a bit risky to get involved in, but he just completely went in and joined him with it.
It's like Dennis Penis went to Melinda Messenger and said, on the red carpet, and said, have you ever thought about opening a Page 3 restaurant? And Melinda Messenger going, oh yeah, we could sell big baps. And you can see Dennis Penis's eyes go, that's the better joke than any of I've got on this bit of paper. But yeah, you're right. I like it when people get involved in... in Meatloaf, he always was an actor. He wanted to be an actor. And then when he was singing as Meatloaf, I think, was he in like a musical, like the Rocky Horror Show or something like that? He was acting as a singer and then just continued to act as a singer.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so never actually wanted to be like the biggest recording artist of like the 90s and like...
No, because the music videos for those kind of big 90s hits that he had that sort of did well in the charts over here were very sort of like little short films, weren't they?
Yeah, like I Would Do Anything for Love and Bat Out of Hell and
like romantic.
Yeah, amazing singer, amazing person. He's really good in like Fight Club, and he's even good in like the 3 seconds he's on Wayne's World. I think he's a great actor and a great singer, and but unhinged as fuck.
Philosophy that once a man admits that he is wrong, that he is immediately forgiven for all wrongdoings. Have you ever heard that?
Get the fuck out my face with that shit. The motherfucker said that shit never had to pick up itty bitty pieces of skull on account of your dumb ass.
I got a threshold, Jules. I got a threshold for the abuse that I will take. Now, I'm a fucking race car, right? And you got me in a red. And I'm just saying that it's fucking dangerous to have a race car in a fucking red. That's all. I could blow.
Oh, you ready to blow?
Yeah, I'm ready to blow.
Well, I'm a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker. Every time my fingers touch brain, I'm super fly TNT. I'm the guns of the Navarone. In fact, what the fuck am I doing in the back? You the motherfucker should be on brain detail. We're fucking switching. I'm washing the windows and you picking up this nigga's skull.
Fine job, gentlemen. You may get out of this yet.
I can't believe this is the same car.
Well, let's not start sucking each other's dicks quite yet. Phase 1 is complete. Clean the car, which moves us right along to phase 2. Clean you.
Outstanding. From, like we say about the best films of all time, that's got to be up there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think as I was watching it, I was just... It is one of those ones that makes you want to think, I'm going to watch that then tonight. But it was only just, I'd forgotten that the clip just ran that little bit longer and got to the bit where Winston Wolfe turns up.
Yeah, he looks weird, pervy when he comes in, doesn't he?
So I suppose we have to talk about when you were the wolf.
Yes. Yes, I was the wolf. I think you labelled me that because I don't think the other two would have got it. So no. I was working in Stevenage and I'd got a call from Greg that you needed help, basically. So I made my way to Greg's house, not knowing really what I was walking into. And then when I walked in, it was the worst mess I've seen of a house belonging to a friend. And can you take over the preamble to before I turned up?
Yeah, it was like a day or a night, well, day and a night out on the drink that ended up back at Greg's. And then I think what probably started as, and it's hazy, obviously, but what would have started as probably making a late night snack in the kitchen just turned into a kind of minor food fight. That then become a major food fight that just, and you know, well, Greg, with it being his own house, in a way, just was completely just went off the rails and was just getting everything he could out of the cupboard and purposely trying to mix things together that he knew were going to be the messiest thing he could do, and like food colouring and custard powder and flour and everything, and just throwing everything up the walls and everywhere he could. And then obviously then passed out and then woke up in the morning.
What was Greg's mum's reaction to it? Were you not there around for that bit?
Yeah.
Because I got there and possibly like 5 or 6 in the afternoon and then not been a lot of tidying happened.
No, I think she'd come back and sort of told him like, you need to like clean this up, and then left again, you know, in a rage, obviously. And then that was when the real sort of cleaning started. I suppose the sobriety was kicking in then as well. So it wasn't, because it would have been one of those ones where you wake up in the morning and probably still a little bit.
I remember Callum telling me that he was starting to clear it up and Greg opened and poured a whole can of mushroom soup over his head. and I came in to, Greg was on the sofa choosing songs for us to clean to. Callum had a shovel in the kitchen, scraping off like stuff off the floor. And then I came up with a plan of the chemicals we'll need to get stuff off walls and cupboards and clean the floors and like trying to tell Greg not to hoover wet stuff and stuff. It was just like, I don't know, just dealing with a child, probably 22.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was... And then, yeah, I was the wolf because I came in with the plan to tidy up the house. And, yeah, we did all right. I think Greg did have to repaint the ceiling. I think that was the main punishment from
it. Yeah, I was going to say, I remember food colouring on the ceiling being quite a big thing, but a big hurdle that was not overcome with cleaning products, so the paint had to come out.
Yeah, these things will happen.
So it's like those things where you know, like we were going back to the art we were talking about at the start, when people say, "Oh, we've written Pulp Fiction."
Yeah,
we even experienced it and didn't have forethought to make a film out of it. Oh yeah, no, but I was tempted to pick something else because I think we've sort of spoken about like Tarantino films and then specifically Pulp Fiction a few times in the past, but I just couldn't ignore it. Because it's just such a snappy little argument. And I think those two talking to each other has always just been one of my favourites. Yeah. Like there's a few sort of scenes or a few sort of bits of that film where it's just those two together.
Yeah, just the script is fantastic. And then Samuel Jackson like was born to play that part, wasn't he? It's just absolutely amazing. And like John Travolta was probably not doing so great at the time, was he? And like got obviously asked to do that film. And he's brilliant as well in kind of his kind of quieter version of Jules, isn't he? Just an amazing scene. I liked so many, like, well, especially when they go shake the three lads in the room up for money and end up killing two of them. And then obviously they kill the third one in the car there. But I remember at the time I didn't want to watch it because I heard it was like really, really gory. But you find yourself kind of laughing at bits that probably aren't funny, you know, when he shoots him in the head in the car, you're kind of like, that's like, that's something funny because he went over a speed bump. He shot him in the face.
there's a comedic element to it, even if it is sort of, even because like very quickly afterwards that happens, the next line, I wouldn't say it's supposed to be funny, but when like the gun goes off, the next line where John Travolta just says, oh shit, I just shot Marvin in the face, like that is the way that's written, it's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
Like saying in the face instead of in the head, even that.
Yeah.
Something funny about it, hasn't it? And but I think that race car in the red thing just sticks with me because it's one of those things that's sort of crossed over that I say regularly. I refer to people being in the red, or Dolly's in the red, you know, if she's like tired or getting a bit kind of grisly. Emma obviously hasn't seen Pulp Fiction as much as I have. So there was one where I'd said in the red a few times, and then I had the ump because Dolly was winding me up. Emma said, oh, don't worry, she's just in the red. Any opportunity to say the Samuel L. Jackson bit. Emma's like, oh, don't worry, she's in the red. And I said, oh, she's in the red. I'm a mushroom clown. Because Emma hadn't seen the film, or certainly not recently, to know what I was talking about. She thought I'm just coming out with this stuff off the top of my head.
You thought you were a mushroom cloud layer.
Going on about. And but then once I finished saying it, I told her it was out of Pulp Fiction. It was about a few weeks later, then she was saying, what was that thing you said the other day? Because she'd started to encounter things at work, which had wound her up, and said that was the first thing that comes to her head now, is she wants to say that she's a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker.
I remember being at school when kind of like, I don't know, when was it, 95, 94, something like that?
95.
And my maths teacher was Mr. Thompson, who went on to be the writer for like a lot of, he wrote the series of Sherlock and Doctor Who episodes. Okay.
Oh, right.
Steve Thompson, look him up. And he's, he's like, he was quite a cool teacher, floppy hair, you know, a bit like Stuart Lee in the kind of teacher's like bit of Vista Fun. And he said, oh, has anyone seen Pulp Fiction? We were like probably 12, 13 at the time. And one of the cooler kids said, yeah, I've seen it, sir. And I thought, I'm not going to say I've seen it because I might get in trouble. I've seen an 18 kind of thing. He took in the kid's work after, like halfway through the lesson. And he said to him, oh, you've got this all wrong. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who get these math questions wrong. And then the cool kid kind of went, what? And then I went, he hasn't seen it, sir. He went, oh, you have, Ghibli? And I went, no, like, you know, just, yeah, I'm like, it's amazing how you could be 12, 13, see a movie, and it still stay with you till like I'm 40 next month, kind of thing. You know, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's definitely a grower. At that age, the things I like about it now wouldn't have been what I liked about it then.
Yeah.
Similar to what I've said before a little bit with like gangster rap music at the time, I would have liked gangster rap, edgy and sort of sweary.
Mm.
Now you look at it and you like it because it was sort of very sort of political and of its time and all the rest of it. I think Pulp Fiction at the time would have just been something that you would have wanted to watch because you knew you shouldn't be.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I wouldn't have been listening by bits of dialogue and thinking, oh man, that's amazing. I can't, you know, there were sort of little bits about it that you might have liked. But
how deep have you dived into it? Have you watched the kind of DVD extras when they tell you all about the cinematography and things?
I don't think I have, no, because I don't think I, funnily enough, I watched it so many times.
Mm.
The run I had where I watched it the most was when I was at university because I had like two other friends who really liked it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been on VHS, so there wouldn't have been extras really.
Oh, right. Yeah. So if you watch it, then
it would have been a bit of a gap. And then it would have been in more recent years, I would have just sort of streamed it and and clips of it, you know? So.
Oh, it's well worth watching. And I think, so when Bruce Willis is being asked by Marcellus Wallace to throw the boxing match.
Yeah.
He sits in a kind of room and half of his face is lit and half of his face is dark. And it says, like, in this scene, like, it's his face is split between light and dark because he has a decision to make of good or evil, what to do.
Oh, right.
And, like, it goes into that kind of minutiae of everything. I'd love it. It's just so interesting. It's kind of like the briefcase as kind of may contain Marcellus Wallace's soul, and he has that kind of plaster on his neck because in Egyptian times that's how you would remove the soul from like people and stuff. And I just think, oh, my God, I wouldn't have known that at all. I wouldn't have noticed it or anything. You know?
No.
And I think from the ages of 12 to probably 25, I'd still just be saying, go get the gimp out. you know.
I think that sort of chopping a film up and not playing it in the...
Yeah.
You know, sort of chronologically. I'm sure it's been done a lot, but that's the one I think of. And then when I see a film or a TV program now, like TV dramas and things doing that, it seems completely normal now. Like if you're watching something on the TV or a film now and they play stuff out of sequence, you don't think, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
It just seems completely normal as a concept because it's just become a thing that people do. It's just a good way of sort of showing you stuff.
Because like obviously the beginning bit with Tim Roth, any of you fucking pigs move, I'll execute.
Yeah.
Like, and then they play the kind of Pulp Fiction theme. And it's quite a long theme and they show a lot of kind of actors and do they have the full credits then?
Yeah.
And that's kind of to show you that that's the kind of end of the film kind of thing. And then you start. But then when you first watched it, if you were lucky enough to go see it at the cinema, you wouldn't think that straight away, like, oh, that would be the end and now he's playing the credits kind of thing. It's just so clever. I'm just like, it'd be a weird day, but to be in Tarantino's head for a day must be a fucking, like, journey.
Yeah, he's I really like him and I like his films and everything, but I've got about three or four podcasts saved now where he's the guest. So he was on Conan O'Brien's Conan Needs a Friend recently.
Right.
And I've not listened to them yet because I listen to a lot of podcasts. I kind of put my headphones in at bedtime to sort of allow me to sort of drift off without, thinking about work or everything.
Yeah, sure.
But he's hard to listen to because he's so high energy in that. So I end up not listening to it because I'm like, oh, I can't. He's too much for me now. It's bedtime, or he's too much for me now. I'm trying to concentrate on something else. I'd almost have to sort of listen to him or see him talk.
I think
else to do other than listen to him.
He has all the traits of someone who does a lot of cocaine, doesn't he?
But yeah.
I don't think he is.
No. I just think some of the things that he does as well. I think I've said to you before, I'm not sort of educated or clever enough about movies to understand what he does.
Yeah.
But I know it's good and I know I like it. So when he just detours off in Kill Bill for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe more, and turns it into like, before you know it, you're watching like an animated movie within a movie. And
it's
just fucking hell. That is just so brave because you could lose so many people, couldn't you? People could be watching that and be like, what is this?
Yeah.
And just turn it off.
You think all of a sudden it's a kind of like, if you Kill Bill, it's kind of built on the whole kind of premise of this badass, like Uma Thurman going around killing the crazy 88s. And it's kind of a big kung fu type movie. But then the beginning of Kill Bill 2, it's kind of like 20 minutes black and white, like Western.
Like, yeah.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Just well, it's, like you say, it's so brave to go, I know that's what they're expecting. So I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I want to make that movie. I don't want to make a movie that people want.
About DVD extras and cinematography and that, and I just wouldn't claim to sort of have seen it or know enough about it. But do you know what I mean? I know what he's doing is like, right, this is special. I'm not sure exactly why.
Yeah.
But it is.
Unbelievable movie, unbelievable person. And the cast of that film is just unreal. Like, nowadays, I see like 10 actors I recognise and I think that film's going to be shit. In the same movie where like Pulp Fiction people at the top of their game plus people returning, like, quite a few people would have gone, I'm gonna go see that film to see what John Travolta's like in it, not like thinking of the broader picture of how good the film Pulp Fiction is going to be.
I like debate, whether it's Pulp Fiction or The Right Stuff or Jeremy Vine show.
Could you name all 10 films where he is the director, not collaborator, but all the 10 he is directly the director of?
So Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown.
All in order so far, well done.
I don't think I'll go in order for the rest of them. Django.
Yep.
Hateful Eight.
Yes, well done. I thought that'd be the hardest one.
Death Proof.
Yep.
Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
That's seven. Is that seven?
Yeah, three to get. The latest one, and then the ones we were just talking about.
Yeah. Right, so is Dust Till Dawn on that list then?
No. No. Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Oh, Kill Bill 1 and 2, yeah. So that takes it up to 9 then.
Yeah.
I've got a blank on one of the ones we were talking about a minute ago.
Yeah. It's his latest one that he got nominated for an Oscar for.
Oh, Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, well done. I thought he had more than that. But then, like you say, he's kind of a collaborator in them rather than...
Yeah, but then like the big absent one from that list, which is up there with one of the best, is True Romance, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good example of those ones that's not one of his. It's just he did something.
Right, cool. I think we might have to do a special on Pulp Fiction. Actually, we'll just leave it like that.
Yeah.
Okay, anything you want to add?
No, I think we dealt with arguments in quite a nice way, you know. Yeah, it's quite positive
without arguing as well, which is maybe I don't think even if we kind of set one up would have been that good.
No.
I don't think we've ever had an argument, so it's probably... Oh my god. No. One sec, Zoe, can you come downstairs please? Oh fuck, one sec, mate.
Mate, get off. No, help. It's got a fucking rabbit. It's alive.
Bag. Oh my goodness. Leo.
Right, leave it alone.
Thanks,
Leo. Sorry, Rockall.
All right.
So, help me out here.
Hey, Leo. What a little bunny. What you done with the bunny?
It's massive.
Come here, you. No. Let's get the cat out of the way. Hi, Rockall.
Am I good at this?
Hello.
Do you want to stop? Can I have the cat and I'll get the rabbit?
Fine. I don't want the cat.
What do you like?
Where shall I put it?
Well, pass it with me and I'll take it out of the front. Okay, it's all right.
Frank upstairs.
You're
going to
give it a heart attack.
It's going to be a fucking heart attack.
Should we call the wolf?
Well, no, don't do that. Stop with me.
Okay.
You have a cat, I'll have a bunny. Easter bunny.
My god, it's massive.
You can put him down now, really, for my bed. Well, don't let the cat look up with me.
At one point then, I heard you say something, and it took me a split second to hear what you'd said, and I think you said, where shall I put it?
Yeah.
I thought you said, where's my pudding?
The cat has just come in with a rabbit about the size of him. Fucking believable. And the worst thing was, it's still alive. So,
God.
Oh dear. Fucking cat. Just seen it come through the door with... I'll probably keep that in.
Please subscribe to us at youtubereviewpodcast.blogspot.com or see us on Twitter at RockleRussell1.